Exactly, right?
Same thing for so many.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Amrin.
Here.
Ms. Silka. Mr. Clapper.
Here.
Mr. Delio.
Here.
Mr. Hooks.
Here.
Ms. Rosenberg.
Here.
Ms. Schaefer Bish.
Here.
Mr. Sidoti.
Here.
Mr. Turner.
Here.
Okay, the first public hearing is proposed zoning map amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. In accordance with section 111.2.01(e)(1) and (2), this public hearing is being held to take comments on a proposed zoning map amendment to change parcel number 17-012-10-00-081-022 with address of 600 Franklin Avenue and parcel number 17-012-10-00-072-002, not yet numbered Franklin Avenue, from its current zoning of industrial zoning district to R3 high density residential zoning district.
Okay, at this time.
Can I make my, yeah. Again, as I said earlier, if you weren't here, this public hearing is just to take comment on the rezoning. We are having a committee meeting tonight as well in the land use committee, in which we will get into more of like a presentation of what occurred at planning commission and also to get in more of the meat and potatoes of the discussion. If that changes anyone's desire to talk at this point, when your name is called, just say pass and you can speak at the committee meeting.
Hey, would the clerk call the first name?
First up, Ann Courtney Davis. Yes, okay. Doria Daniels. Yes, all right. Sally Burnell. Okay. Mary Jo Stewart Minor. Yes, okay. Jeffrey Thorpe. Brian Gray. Yay. Come on up, Brian.
Give your name and address and we'll give you 3 minutes to.
Brian Gray, 3969 Ranfield Road. I'd just like to say that I'm against the rezoning for several reasons. I think first, it's a bad place to put that many houses. I think pretty much every farm around town is being turned into housing, and just downtown in that area, it's a more special area. It's pretty much downtown. If you extend it, it could be a good place for business. It could be a good place for community events. It could be a good place for a park. I don't think it should be housing. Secondly, the buildings are historic in nature, built in 1865 by Marvin Kent. That's the reason the city is named Kent, because he built the railroad buildings and brought the railroad through town. I think we should honor that and we should keep them standing. And if they are torn down, I think they will be a great loss to the city. And if it gets zoned as residential, there's a 100% chance that will get torn down. I think it has a lot of potential as either industrial or business. And I think we should explore those options. There's a lot of different things that it could be while maintaining the historic nature.
Thank you. Second?
Donna Gray. Carol Tharp. Ben Garmier. Todd Packer.
Give your name and address for the record, and we'll give you 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Todd Packer. I live with my family at 543 Rockwell Street in Kent. And honorable members of the City Council of the City of Kent, I'm here this evening as a resident, a taxpayer, and a dad to urge you, the Kent City Council, to maintain the designation of the area under discussion as zoned for industrial use, and do not change the zoning register designation to high use residential. We don't need additional residential housing in that area of Kent, when we have other much safer and more convenient areas across the city, either already designated as residential or not sitting in a highly active industrial area. While maintaining the current zoning as industrial, I strongly urge you as a council to support economic development via job creation in this industrial area with the viable businesses already there that could transform the area in question into good workplaces, contributing to the vitality, diversity, and integrity of the south side of Kent. Till we complete the remediation to industrial, we don't know the scope of contamination or the true cost of remediation to support even potential residential living in the area. And as a dad, I would not want my kids playing in that dirt or raising a family in that area. Therefore, I urge you to maintain the industrial zoning designation for the area under discussion in general and in particular until we know the results of the remediation of that area. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff St. Clair. There's no difference. The council will still listen to what you have to say. It's just that in the committee meeting, the mayor does not put a time limit on your what you want to say, and also they can go the conversation can get a little bit more detailed.
Travis Coben.
Okay. That's all they have.
Okay. Second public hearing is proposal door boundary extension. Oh, Eric.
Thank you, Mayor. In accordance with the requirements of Ohio Revised Code 4301.82, regulating the application to City Council for the expansion of the downtown Kent designated outdoor refreshment area known as the Dora, the Kent City Council is conducting this public hearing to afford the public the opportunity to comment on a proposed application that, if approved, will expand the boundary of the Dora. The Dora allows for the sale of alcoholic beverages for outdoor consumption within the boundaries of the Dora.
Is there any comment from the public on this item? Not the public hearing or adjourned. We'll move into our regular committees, and we'll start with the committee of the whole. Neighbor beautification awards.
Yep, Mr. Mayor. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump in. I just was going to remind everybody that this is our, I guess, second awards that we're giving, round of awards that we're giving to residents in Kent whose properties are so well maintained or so well landscaped that Dominique and her small committee have selected them. They have been nominated from various sources, and she's got two winners tonight. So I'll turn it over to her and let her tell you what the properties are.
Yes, I'm so glad so many people are here to learn about this program that the city has too. So if you guys see these signs out in your neighborhoods, you know that they have been chosen. I'm so sorry. There we go. Okay. So our first one is Mary Bass at 1137 Norwood Street, and she's in Ward 2. So again, these folks have been nominated by their neighbors. Is Mary here? She was very excited. I was gonna say she could say for herself how excited she was to get this award. A lot of the folks, they've been very surprised. They feel very honored. And she's got some beautiful stuff going on there. And then this next house, John and Kathleen, they're over on Aaron Drive. The person who submitted their application was very impressed with the renovation or the update they did for their landscaping this summer. And so when I was telling John, he was like, oh my gosh, I didn't really think anybody would notice what I'm doing, like when you're just putting around in your yard. So he was really thankful for that. And yeah, So if you see those signs out there, you know, those are our yards of the month. Any questions?
Okay, staff updates. Bridget, you're going to introduce Dan, second time around at the city.
With the creation of the Assistant Community Development Director position, it has been filled. I'm happy to report by Dan Morganti. So some of you know him. For those of you that don't, he actually was our Grants and Neighborhood Programs Coordinator from 2013 to 2019. So through statute of the Ohio Revised Code, the city of Kent has a seat on the land bank. And when the county land bank was established in 2012, Dan started about 6 months later, and he and I were running the land bank virtually out of the community development department because we were the only ones that had housing experience. When the land bank was successful and a full-time staff person was needed, nobody could figure out who, and I knew who it was. So I sacrificed Dan. I told him he should apply for the position, and he got it, and he's done an amazing job at the land bank. It's successful with securing grants and also putting properties back on the tax rolls, which is the whole objective of the land bank. But when this position was created, I talked to Dan and he was willing and wanted to come back. So it's Dan. I'll let him talk for a few minutes.
Thank you, Bridget. So as Bridget mentioned, for about the past 5.5 years, I've been executive director of the Portage Land Bank. If you don't know what a land bank is, essentially it focuses on redeveloping and reusing vacant and abandoned properties, typically that are tax delinquent. So it does that work throughout Portage County. As Bridget also mentioned, this is my second time with the city. I was here for about 6.5 years, primarily working on grants and housing programs at that time. So I feel like my past experiences led to kind of a smooth transition, at least for this first month that I've been here. I'm glad to be back, and it's really been nice. There's been a lot of familiar faces that has benefited that process. So looking forward to working under Bridget's leadership, Dave, and alongside council to further the community development related goals of the city. Thanks.
Hey, welcome home. Next on the agenda, we have Project Dawn and Joan from the Health Department. Here she comes.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity to just give you a brief update on the Project Dawn events that we've held this past month, and actually one more in September. As you may remember from last month's meeting, we received an $8,000 stipend from the state to hold different events. We were strongly encouraged to partner with other individuals and not just do solo projects. So we partnered with Access Family Services, Our Place, Kent State University, and a number of different levels with DeWeese Healthcare Center, Fraternity and Sorority Life, as well as Dana and Jen helped me secure a place on campus to do our overdose awareness day on the 29th. Also the Kent Police Department. We also decided that we would do some types of education that were maybe a little bit more passive in nature. And so we printed out hundreds of these labels, and I shopped them around to various pizza establishments and was really surprised at how welcoming they were. I just asked them that over the weekend if they would put those on their pizzas being delivered to homes as sort of a way to let people know that Project Dawn is available, it saves lives, and you can get it free of charge at the health department. We also turned these into coasters. I delivered them to bars. So I had that as I was going around to some of the different bars. They misunderstood my coasters as posters. And the gentleman that owns Dominic said, make us some posters, we'll hang them up. So we made posters and dispersed those around the city as well. So I was really happy. It was nice to be able to do something that was not enforcement related. We have a joint concern. We want people to be healthy. They want their patrons to be able to come back. There are some bars that have actually distributed, not just distributed, but given their clients Narcan in the city of Kent. So they were very happy to have this information and you know, to have it available. So I think that that is a nice partnership. And I know you may have heard in the news that overdose deaths in Ohio have declined, but still 1 in 3 people are impacted by an overdose death. So there's still more work that has to be done. During the different events that we had, we gave out 400 doses of Narcan, 110 fentanyl test strips, and multiple safe sex and hygiene kits as well. So it was a good partnership. The people received it very well. I was surprised at the number of freshman students that say, oh, my mom gave me Narcan in my go to college packet. Yeah. You know, like, so they're not just being sent to college with Band-Aids and that. So I think it's good, and it's good for students to know that we care and that we have this available. So that's my update. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, our Kent State Town and Gown Update, Dr. Dana.
Thank you, Mayor. It's good to be before all of you in council. It's my first time being here, and I must say, this just upped the game a whole lot. It's very lovely, different than being in the basement of the fire station, though I will miss the calls that come through. So, but it's exciting to always come and share an update from the university with all of you. If you haven't noticed, we're back. There are 20,000 students enrolled across our university system, 6,000 on campus, and then quite a large majority off campus. We get those property numbers and review them. So traffic, in addition to East Main Street and all the things you've probably noticed. Our businesses are excited, though, too, but we are back. Overall enrollment has remained steady, and we're very proud of this, as many of you have probably heard of things like the demographic cliff, concerns with international enrollment. So being steady is almost, in many ways, being almost as an increase. So we're slightly down about 1.5%, and we attribute that mainly to graduate students. Some international student enrollment, which still remains very unknown given the geopolitical climate. But overall, as I mentioned, we're 20,000 students strong and feel pretty good with where we are overall with our enrollment. Many of you, Mayor in particular, had my favorite statement on Flash's first Friday. The mayor was like, we've never seen this many students downtown. And it was amazing. It was a vision that we have worked towards for a long time to figure out how do we really get all of our new students and returning students downtown. And I finally think we hit the sweet spot. We were overwhelmed. I think the businesses were overwhelmed, and it was a great problem to have. There were thousands of students. Some of the pictures were simply amazing. We're going to reassess now that we know how to get them there and continue to improve and welcome any of your suggestions and feedback. What's been neat, though, is we've heard from businesses of students coming back, which is the goal, is really making sure students see the university and the community as a seamless system. We know when students choose Kent State, one of the top three reasons is because of our community. In fact, I shared the story with Dave. On campus, we have different food distributions that pop up with United Way. And one's the first Wednesday of every month, if ever you want to stop by or volunteer. And I had a couple students from Bangladesh who were there participating, and they had never even visited the United States. And I said, what made you pick Kent? And they said, the pictures. We loved the city. So it just, I know it's, we often take it for granted, but please know it is a big part of why people choose here. Also, if you paid attention last week, although there was another big game, Kent State broke our 21-game losing streak, which was a very big deal. We're very proud of that. And we hope it's a good omen going forward. Some upcoming key dates, Parents and Family Weekend is September 12th and 13th, and also Homecoming's on October 11th. The big news there is Council approved a new parade route due to the East Main Street construction, which will be down Summit. So I love that there's many people here, although for different reasons, to help us get that message out, as we really want the community to continue to know we want you there. You just have to come a little further into campus for the next couple years. Also, a few other events. If you go into Stowe, we have our big aerospace and engineering expo going on this Saturday. Fall break is when students head home for a nice break, is October 2nd through the 5th. And then October 29th is our annual Bowman Breakfast, of which you're all invited, and we hope you plan to attend. More information will be forthcoming on the speaker. The chamber chose the speaker this year. We alternate it each year, and again, we'll make sure you all get your invitations. And then just a few university updates. I know many of you know this, but it happened so quickly and over summer, but Dr. Mark Politico, who's been a friend and very connected to Town and Gown efforts, our former senior vice president for finance and administration, Rhonda's former employee, retired as of August 1st and is off doing great things. Jeannie Reeve Snyder is the interim there, but that office is instrumental in a lot of our facilities, our planning, our construction, our taxes, and all of the things. So wanted to make sure council knew that. And then you probably have heard quite a bit about our Transformation 28, which is our academic restructuring plan that has been approved by the Board of Trustees, and it's pretty significant. It's restructuring all the degree and non-degree granting colleges at the university. It's probably the most audacious restructuring that we've gone through and as far as academic affairs, and that is an administrative restructuring, but most of that will be moving through those administrative procedural pieces throughout this year, with most of the implementation going into next year. But if you have any questions, one of the key things I think you all know is getting good information out there, so please let me know. I'm happy to answer those or direct you to the website. And then we continue to meet with city leadership. Dave and I meet pretty regularly just to solve joint challenges, talk about needs and opportunities. We know housing's one of those. It's part of this discussion here. And we know there's a commitment from our leadership to explore ideas and opportunities. I think we've got some ideas brewing that we'll be excited to explore together, because I know council's very interesting in looking at non-student housing options. And we're committed to being a partner and seeing what those things can look like. Finally, two other points. We started a new initiative to promote local businesses in our weekly faculty and staff newsletter, really trying to get folks to come out of their office and check out all the great businesses, and that's been well received. We also, every Wednesday, and any of you are invited, have Food Truck Wednesday. So if you want to come check out food trucks, I had food truck lunch today. It was outstanding. So come on the campus, see the young people. They're wildly entertaining, and have a good lunch. Support a local food truck. And then I also understand that some council folks are interested to get connected to students or maybe be a little more involved on campus. So I invite you to reach out to me. That's part of my role, is to help connect those dots and make that something that's easy to do. So just send me an email and I'll be happy to connect, or a phone call, and listen to what your interests are and how you would like to get connected. So happy to take any questions or comments.
Any questions from council?
Can I offer a quick one? Thank you, Dana, as always. But she gave me some information recently that I found was quite interesting. She looked up the alumni that live in Kent, and it's roughly one out of three people in Kent are KSU alumni. That's, isn't that high, right? So we talk about creating the kind of community people want to stay, and I think it is something that's real. And I think our size and the things that we work on together to really create that feeling that not only can you have some of your most impressionable years as a student, but maybe you could stay here and be maybe a lifelong resident. So thank you for that data. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
That's it for committee of the whole. We'll move into land use committee. Ms. Chamberlain.
So land use committee, I just want to say a few opening words for the benefit of the audience and for council. Just so you know that the way that we typically do a committee is that there's some kind of presentation from staff, sometimes by some guests, and then council will have the opportunity to ask questions. Once council is completed with their question asking, at least for now, then we will go to the audience. And, you know, we would ask that people keep their comments brief, but we want to make sure that everyone gets heard. Finally, it's really important that we recognize that the topic today is rezoning. It's not a specific development. That is what we need to stick to, and I've been told that we'll get some points of order if we stray. So Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you. As Heidi mentioned, there was on the August 19th meeting of the Planning Commission, a presentation by of an application request from a developer, Gray Fox RE LLC, to rezone two parcels from industrial to R3 high density residential. As Heidi had mentioned, proposed zoning map amendments requests are not specific to any project. They have to consider all permitted and conditionally permitted uses that are in existence now and what could be there if the proposed map amendment goes forward. You may remember we've actually had two map amendments before some members of council that have been here since 2019. And those map amendment requests were focused on just the map amendment to the new zoning districts. And both the projects that were loosely mentioned did not come to fruition. So it's always going to be focused on what is the current zoning versus compared to what will be the proposed new zoning. On the 8/19 Planning Commission meeting, I'm going to give a summary of the public comments and then Planning Commission. During the public comments section, there were two written correspondence that were received and disseminated to the Planning Commission, one in favor of the map amendment request and one opposing the map amendment request. There were 17 total speakers, one who spoke twice, one spoke in favor of the project, seven spoke against the project, seven voiced concerns associated with traffic and access, and that is because information about a potential project had been released, not by the city, but through other sources in the community. So it was clarified for those members of the public that there is no project. So while traffic concerns and access can be considered generalized for a change in use, it is not specific to a project. One member of the public referenced the historic structures and concerns about them not being maintained. And one made a general comment about having the Planning Commission and others walk the site. And that is a great idea. However, that would be trespassing. So the city would not advocate for that to happen. With regards to the Planning Commission discussion, it was discussion and questions. One of the members was referenced a remediation standard under the grant is to get it to the commercial industrial. So if zoning changed it to the R3, the multi high density residential, how will it affect the grant and would a new assessment be needed? I can speak to the fact that a new assessment would be needed because the voluntary action plan, which is required for remediation of a brownfield that has basically chemicals of concern or COCs, requires it go through the VAP, the Voluntary Action Plan of the Ohio EPA. And if you change it from even one use to another, a new assessment is needed to make sure that the remediation is needed. With regards to what would actually happen to the grant, that is not something I can speak to. The grant is between the land bank and the Ohio Department of Development with input from the Ohio EPA. So that would be up to the grant parties to deal with. One of the members also said that the property currently does not even meet the industrial standards for chemicals of concern on site, and the grant is just to get it to commercial industrial standards that are allowed or that would meet the requirements of the Voluntary Action Plan, also known as the VAP. One member referenced the housing study data, referenced that in that study, it identified that Kent is 40% owner occupied compared to 70% Portage County overall. And while owner occupied is a permitted use, she does not see a new construction of owner occupied occurring on a site that's adjacent to a railroad based on the cost it is to buy a parcel and construct. She also said that it is more likely, while we're not looking at a specific project, that would end up to be a multi-unit site. And that the housing study identified that the city is over inventoried on multifamily rental units. She also referenced that, again, while this is not specific to any project, if it were to be multi-unit, if it's not affordable housing but high rent, that basically 61% of the households in Kent are at 80% and below the AMI, but not many can afford fair market rate rents. Another member questioned about the environmental covenant He's referring to the remediation study that was used for the grant itself, the voluntary action plan. It's the RAP remediation action plan that's done by Brownfield Restoration Group. They put that together for the land bank to submit for the grant request. The question was, because in the six remediation steps listed, one of them is an environmental covenant on land on the site. And basically, it's a land use restriction. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's actually a recorded deed that prohibits certain uses or certain areas being used for certain uses. And this would basically a land use restriction for commercial industrial uses only on portions of the site. We actually have one on Ametek. For those of you that do not know, Brownfield Restoration Group actually did the brownfield remediation on that site under the former brownfield program called the Clean Ohio Revitalization Fund, or CORF. You may remember that was one that took us 8 years, but we did get through it. It had chlorinated solvents on there. There's a portion of that site where the remediation could not even get it to commercial industrial standards. So the city still owns we call it a flag parcel, a portion of that, so that the owner, Smithers Oasis, who bought it, did not have to take on the responsibilities of the contamination, because they would be responsible for that. And then the last one was if the land use restriction for land if we rezone it to R3 residential, and the land use restriction that I just spoke of is part of the grant, what will happen to the grant? Again, not a question that I can speak to. That would have to be answered by ODOD and by the Ohio EPA. But the city, if it was rezoned, would be required to notify the land bank as well as Brownfield Restoration Group that it was rezoned from the zoning, because we sent a letter to them saying what the zoning was at the time they were applying for the grant. At this time, I believe there are representatives from Gray Fox that would like to do a presentation.
That up there. Can you hear me okay? Right. Let's unlock my computer and get this started. And I think that should do it. Oh, look at that nice background. Right. Let's see if I can bring that over.
High density resolution.
I don't know if someone from IT is here, maybe see what I'm doing wrong. Perfect. Thank you. Simple as hitting a button. Man, wish I was smarter.
Did I get your name and address for the record?
Yes. Jake Shields, 2929 Saybrook Boulevard, Stowe, Ohio. Members of council, mayor, city manager, staff, thank you all for allowing me to talk about this project. Maybe not the project, but the request for rezoning of this property. Mm-hmm. I will try to go through this pretty quickly, but there is some information to cover. So I ask you bear with me, and happy to answer any questions during or at the end. As I said, I'm Jake Shields. I work with a development company called Great Box Capital. I've worked there for 2 years. Prior to that, I was at another development company, and prior to that was at a company called Redwood Living for 8 years. Great Box Capital is a development company out of Independence, Ohio. They've been around for roughly 15 years and has handled numerous projects coming from residential, like single family, townhomes, to multifamily, also to commercial as well. We're doing the
Aldi and Chick-fil-A over in Streetsboro, actually, right at this moment. Part of this discussion, alongside with me, are two companies that we partner with pretty significantly, not just in this project, but in countless others. One is called Pride One Construction. They're out of Medina, Ohio. They've been in business for over 30 years. They've done a numerous number, close to, I think, 15,000 multifamily units, if not more, countless commercial, industrial, office sites as well. So they have had extremely long background of construction, and we partner with them mainly on these rental townhome and ranch communities. Now, we also partner with a company called PMC Financial Services. And I always like to talk about them as well, because they're not just an asset for us, but they're also and have been an asset for many other developers and cities as well. They focus on being able to take sites that otherwise are undevelopable, or maybe sites that are previously like an old industrial factory or just old buildings, and be able to transform it into new development. And so with them, with partnering with us on that, we're able to accomplish a lot of projects that typically aren't financially feasible. So I say all that, and I'll get more into it as well, but I say all this just to kind of highlight the fact that as a development company, as a partner with these partnerships, we have done a lot of these projects together. We have a lot of experience and wealth of knowledge on these sites that we've done and completed. And so when we look at new opportunities, we have the ability to look and say, what belongs here? We have the flexibility. So it's not trying to force something where it doesn't belong. Just through our experience, we're able to suggest alternatives that could work. And there are alternatives, obviously, as we are businesses, that we believe are going to be successful. These, as every other business, we are in the business of making money. And so this is something, frankly, for us to, specifically looking at this site, we believe that it will be a successful project if the project can go through, assuming the rezoning is rezoned. So a little bit about us is just a list of recent and current developments that we are working through and have developed. I'd like to highlight Brimfield, Ohio. We have villas at Wiles Farm. It's just south of 76 on east of 43. It is 103 ranch rental community. It's 103 unit ranch rental community. That was roughly, I believe, $23 million. And a hard investment on our end with a equity that we had to put up of roughly $5 million. And I say that just to, again, point to the fact that we do have the resources and capabilities and the history and experience to handle some of these more difficult projects, not just on one project, but on many. And just a couple pictures of some of our recent projects, just to give an idea. This is on the top left and bottom right are Sagamore Hills property. So we're here to talk about the site in question, the old Davy Drill piece. This has been around Kent and very, as it's been pointed out, has a lot of historical value to this community. Originally, it was actually, I learned this about a month ago. A person came up to me to talk to me about it, and let me know that the site was first identified for residential, and then obviously with Marvin Kent coming in and building the train car factory. Something that I was told is that at the time it was employing roughly 800 people in a township that had roughly 2,500 people. So this was an economic powerhouse for this community. It put Kent on the map, so to speak, and was a very driving force on what it is today. Additionally, in the 1940s, there were additional buildings that were added. But since I think it was 1973, the site has stayed relatively inactive underutilized and without much industrial use at all. And now, obviously, we were talking about the environmental. There is evident environmental waste on the site that is to be cleaned up just from years and years of use. Now, this location of the site is pretty unique in that it touches the downtown district. Obviously, the northern portion highlighted in blue is already zoned commercial downtown CD with the intent to, I think it was to put a hotel, but it was to create more businesses, more movement on the south side of Kent. That obviously did not come to fruition, but it still yet it, today remains as an industrial site overall. I'd like to highlight, and I'll get into this a little bit in a minute, but these road connections on the site are mainly through residential back road neighborhoods. They're not through main corridors. And as it stands, and as many neighbors and residents living there, they are probably accustomed to not a whole lot of traffic to this site. If it was to be developed, regardless of industrial or residential, there will be an increase in development on these back roads. And my question to those residents is it going to be big trucks and industrial trucks going down these residential roads, or are they going to be your neighbors driving through these roads, new residents? So to go into the main request, which is simply put, we're trying to rezone it industrial to an R3 residential. We believe that this site is not suited, as I started to mention, for industrial. And there's a couple of ways to look at this. As I mentioned, access is extremely important. As it stands, there is a connection to Summit Street. What I've been told is that that may not be a future desire to have that access point. So really what's left are residential neighborhoods to be driving through. Not on top of that too, the shape is quite irregular for new and existing industrial uses. If you look at the big spec buildings being built off of Seasons Road in Stowe, those are massive warehouses. They would have a very hard time fitting on a site like this. And really what it would be is a lot of truck traffic. And in terms of where it's located as well, I kind of have this slide up here saying transitional zoning. You know, we this is a very unique site where, as I mentioned, it backs up to commercial to the north. You have residential on the east, single family homes on the east, railroad on the west, and industrial to the south. As you can see in this little graphic here, multifamily is the one opportunity that's set. That's what's unique about this site is when industrial was here at this site back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, this was more on the outskirts of town. This wasn't near the downtown. Since then, downtown is booming, as we all can see. There is a expansion of where the industrial is. It's closer to 261, near closer to 76 off of 43. That's the seemingly where the industrial use is going. And there is still rail access down there. So from my standpoint, being a third party to all this, this makes a wonderful residential opportunity. You have an opportunity to have 100, 200 potential new residents that are now being able to walk to downtown to utilize all those businesses and restaurants. And that to me is a huge boost to the economy of Kent. A lot of, you can see this actually in Cuyahoga Falls, they're trying to do this as well, bringing in townhomes. I think it's the Hi-Ho over in Cuyahoga Falls on 2nd Street. They're putting in townhomes. They're trying to build that that mass of rooftops so that they can support these downtown businesses that they've already brought in. And so that's an important, and I think really wonderful opportunity for the city to take advantage of. Not only that for the downtown, but you also have the wonderful park system. You have residents who would be dying to be able to walk to the bike path, to jump, you know, get in their float and jump down into the river and float the river It is a really unique opportunity. But as we've already discussed, there's this whole issue of the environmental cleanup. Now, I just kind of want to run through this. I'm not a VAP professional. I'm not a certified person. And I don't want to be. But I want to just state pretty clearly is one of the things that I guess was mentioned in Planning Commission, I think after I was able to speak more of it, but the absence of the restricted residential use in the brownfield restoration group, you know, that to me is not because it's not capable of being cleaned to that point, but it was because it was a scope that was requested of BRG to do. So we actually worked early on in this analysis of finding this site. We reached out to our consulting firm, SME Consultants. They are a large, pretty large firm, 380 people plus, VAP certified professionals, working over 100,000 projects across the Midwest, including brownfield developments for development, redevelopment, commercial, residential, and industrial. And they did a full analysis of BRG's reporting, all of their reports that we know of. And their analysis at the end came back and said that they believed that this type of product would be accepted by the Ohio EPA. Now, there will be expanded cleanup that will need to occur. That would be on our dime that we would have to take on after the industrial grant has gone through, it's been cleaned up to industrial. We would then go beyond that and work with the Ohio EPA, which is the governing authority for the most, you know, for these types of projects, obviously working with the land bank in the city as well. But we would be then going beyond, above and beyond, and cleaning it to residential to allow for this type of product. But I would like to just take a moment and say, you know, I know that there's been some hypotheticals throwing out of you know, what if we were to buy the property and we get it rezoned and you know, it doesn't work out that it's residential. Well, in the worst case, it's going to be cleaned up to industrial, right? Just as it is already set to be cleaned up to industrial. So the only difference is then we're the ones that would be, you know, flat out on our feet, but we would be coming back and trying to come up with another way to do something with this property. So we would then be coming back to city council, be in this right, this same spot, and say, we'd like to rezone it to commercial, to whatever it is, whatever we're allowed to do. That's worst case scenario. So really what it comes down to is this is an opportunity to make it beyond an industrial cleanup. It's an opportunity to make it cleaner than what it potentially is only going to be, which for a downtown connected site, I feel that is a really big opportunity to be seen by not just Kent, but all the surrounding communities. So that goes to my next point is another comment that unfortunately I wasn't able to speak to at Planning Commission. This idea that it's kind of the dog or the cart before the horse idea, that we need it cleaned up before we get it rezoned. Now at first glance, that can definitely make sense. But on if you dig further, you'll see that there's some nuance to that, because really what it comes down to is a developer who will need to put up that money to clean it to industrial and then clean it to residential, which, as was mentioned, could be upwards of $2 to $3 million. That's a significant sum of money that, frankly, you know, no person in their right mind would put up without any assurance from the city. There needs to be some assurance through zoning and plan approval that from the city to allow the developer to spend that type of money. And I would say this even further is, as it stands, the bank to receive this grant, this $1.3 million, they have to put up $435,000 of their own money to even start work on this grant to clean to industrial. Now, I'm not the bank. I'm not saying I am at all. But if I was the bank, I would be very concerned if the rezoning was turned down. And I say that because this site has been listed for a very long time. It's been available for a very long time. I'm sure you'll have people that could be coming up here speaking to say that they would love to have this site for industrial use. To that, I would say it's been listed. It's been available for a long time and no development has occurred. So the likelihood of this development or this site becoming an industrial development, I would say, is very slim. Now, work with me here. If this bank is looking to put up $435,000, that just increased the value of the land by $435,000. So if the sale price is stated as it is, it would increase by $435,000. I don't see any industrial user that would be saying, yes, I want to pay more for a site that I actually don't need the industrial cleanup to be done in the first place. And so this is a really pivotal point, is that if the rezoning doesn't occur for a residential use, the bank is unlikely to move forward with the brownfield grant because it's their money that they have to put up. They don't feel secure and held, working with the city. And obviously, we as a developer would walk away willing and ready to spend our own money and time on a project to make it into something much more than what it is currently, which is a blighted site. I think just to make a couple quick comments as well, there was a question on the over inventory of multifamily and that there's not enough people that could afford this. My answer to that is, I believe, as actually was just previously discussed, there are so many people who go to Kent State, who want to stay in Kent State and have a family in Kent State and retire in Kent State or in Kent. And unfortunately, there's not enough housing for that. So what you find is you have a lot of people who are over in Stowe and Talmadge and Streetsboro who would love to enjoy the amenities that Kent has to offer, but is unable to find the inventory and the product. By being able to produce this product, I've had several people come to me and say, hey, I want to sell my house. I want to move in here. This would be a wonderful concept. I don't have any more kids. You know, I got this home that I'm taking care of. I don't, you know, want to handle that. We would be providing an opportunity, an option for them. And
I'm going to call point of order real quick that we can't speak to what could potentially be built on the site. We're only speaking about the zoning.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, if it is set for residential, you are opening up more inventory. Regardless of what it is, it's more inventory, which would allow people who want to live in Kent to live in Kent, as many people are. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to go through. We do have, I obviously understand, the rules here, so I don't want to speak any more of the project. But if there are questions, happy to address them now or at another time. So,
Bridget,
you.
I have a question for Bridget. Is this a good time to ask questions or do you want to? Sure, open up questions to council. Robin.
Yeah. Since we're not speaking. Thank you. The issue which is kind of hanging out there is the remediation. What are you feeling your possibilities if, in fact, you're, and again, that's a chicken and egg aspect, of being able to address that from a financial standpoint and otherwise, that seems to be a very heavy lift. What are the probabilities on that?
The only way in my mind that this project would not move forward, assuming the rezoning is completed, is if the Ohio EPA was to say there's no possible way that residential can be put here. We have completed many, many projects that have had a lot of heavy lifting, old school buildings, other industrial buildings, other dirty sites. On top of that too, we have the ability to raise equity on a type of project that a lot of investors are willing to invest in. They see the opportunity and the success of them. We have no concerns. It would only be to the extent that Ohio EPA was to say there's no way. And from our standpoint, SME has done a full analysis of BRG's reporting. They believe that it is possible.
Melissa.
So just as a point of clarity, who owns the property right now?
Hometown Bank.
And how is the land bank connected into that? Because I've heard that referred to in lots of different ways. If you could clarify that.
So when the last, in the previous budget, the Brownfield grant funding that was issued by the General Assembly, the state of Ohio through Department of Development, identified land banks as being the conduit for the funding in every county. Okay. So the land bank solicited different communities, and actually the Community Development Department said that Davy Drill had a phase one that showed that there was chemicals of concern on the site.
Got it.
And it might be eligible for a phase one and a phase two remediation plan. So the funding is between the land bank and Hometown.
Okay.
Prior grant funding was direct to communities, and that's how we secured the grant for the Triangle Cleaner site. So each budget cycle, the new additional funding was just approved by the General Assembly. It allocated $1 million for each county, additional $12 million statewide. No first in, first out, because that was what the projects were aligned last time. And so people that got in quick, Dan got it in 6 minutes, which is why he was successful in securing this grant. But many cities were backlogged and did not. So there'll not be a first come, first serve. But there was a backlog of projects that were not funded. So those are probably going to be in the mix to be considered. Ohio Department of Development has not released any information on the regulations, but the next round does not have a match requirement, and it doesn't necessarily need to go through the land bank. It can go through a land bank or a community, a county, or a private entity.
Okay. So there's more flexibility
in this
perhaps round, second round.
But there's less funding.
But less funding.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Thank you so much, Mr. Shields, for this great presentation and for your interest in bringing housing to our community. I can understand why you and Hometown Bank would want to limit your risk. I completely understand. As a business person, it makes a lot of sense for you to come to us and say, we want the rezoning first. But in any kind of development or investment, there's always risk.
Sure.
It is not the duty of City Council to minimize risk for investors. Our job is to protect the community. And I have a really big concern, and my concern is that it's already been the stated goal of the federal government to eliminate the EPA. It will probably happen, if it is all possible, over the next 3 years. If that happens and we have allowed this rezoning, what do you think the outcome would be? The funding would dry up and anybody could build anything there that they wanted. And then we, as a community, may be responsible for allowing housing to go in that location where it is dangerous for human health. And I have a personal background in this, in that I lived adjacent to a dump because I had a very modest upbringing. And I lost my 5-year-old brother to cancer, as did a lot of people on my street. And so our obligation, and mine that I feel very strongly, is that while we need additional housing, and I love Hometown Bank. It is a great organization that has funded many of the businesses and development in our community, and they deserve many, many kudos for that and our undying gratitude. If you had come to us 5 years ago, I don't think that there would be as much of a concern switching the zoning. But we have an obligation to protect our community from what may happen, not a 10% likelihood, but more like a 50 to 70% likelihood, mm-hmm. because it is already a stated goal from the federal government to eliminate the EPA.
You have a question?
I want to understand what they would do. What would you do if we rezoned it, the EPA went away, you didn't have any funding, what would you build? How would you approach that?
Sure. If you don't mind, I can kind of just talk through it. So number one, to be able to develop any development, obviously, yes, we do have to mitigate risk, but it is not the requirement of the city to mitigate all risk. But in any business, to make an investment in a future opportunity, you want to know that there is a chance that that investment can come into fruition. And so that's the part of, you know, zoning, it's a future look. Many cities will look at areas. They may not know what the specifics are of those areas, but they say, hey, industrial should go here, residential should go here, maybe some commercial in the mix, and they'll do some large zoning changes because it's a future, focused. Now, as part of development, you know, we're in the business to make something work, right? So if we see that there is not a avenue to clean it up, to allow residents to stay, we're not going to be developing. Because, and this is specific to the question, so I just want to, you know, I'm going to say a little bit about the project, I'll just maybe say with other projects, but we own these other projects that we would be looking to do similar here. It would not be in our best interest. Number one, we're required to give, if it's brownfield, any notice and all notices to the residents that be living there and what the risks are, and that's just a requirement. Yes, but if say something was to change, I mean, residents will still know that there is environmental concerns. They would not rent at our communities. We would lose our job, our business.
That's true, but the only reason that anybody would know is if the EPA told people. And if they don't exist, there's nothing in place that would require you to clean up the land. You wouldn't have the money. And we would have rezoned it residential.
Well,
on the flip side, you could clean it up. And if you get it to residential standards, we could rezone it.
But that would never happen. I would, just to be honest with you. I mean, any development, whether it's industrial or residential, commercial, they have to have some buy-in from the community, from the city. Without, you know, they're not going to make a business decision on a whim and hope that it just pans out. They have to have some involvement. So we would not pursue. You know, if we're going down that hypothetical of things, Ohio EPA not happening, and you know, if there's a, through planning, the planning portion, if there's a requirement, say we do get through rezoning, we're planning, doing the site plan and whatnot, say, you know, the city can have conditional approvals on how sites get developed. So I would say that would be a portion, you know, in that part, to be brought up, and honestly, that's in our best interest, right? I mean, that's in everyone's best interest. You know, we're here to not just, you know, jump ship once we develop it. We own our communities. You know, we're in the business to making sure that people want to live there and enjoy it. And so this would, we would absolutely be open to those types of agreements with the city.
when we get down to that process.
Thank you, Mr. Shields.
Absolutely.
Roger.
Get yelled at for not turning that up. I'm kind of curious. I know that you said you work with a financial analyst basically on the project. I assume that they have projected what your company is going to make. I'm sure that they projected all the numbers. These guys are a lot smarter than I am.
And
I'm curious. I am curious. So have they projected what would be the increase in property taxes to the city of Kent or in general property taxes?
I think when you're talking about a specific development.
No, I'm talking
when
about.
When you're talking about.
Hypothetical, if that property hypothetically is changed from industrial, if that property is changed, you know, hypothetically from industrial to residential, what do you think? What would be the thoughts about what the, first of all, the property tax, and then if it's single family homes that were owned individually, would that make a difference in the amount of property tax increase for schools? Because, you know, if you're talking about families, you know, coming in, well, has there been any thought about that?
So let's try to avoid getting into the weeds on what kind of residential. We're just looking at, you know, maybe a question like, do you see an increase in property tax?
Yeah, well, I think in all due respect, I think if we're considering changing it to residential, or we're having that discussion about residential, I would think that it would be appropriate for city council to take into account, would there be the potential for increased residential income taxes, residential property taxes. I think that seems to be appropriate if we're talking about potentially changing, you know, forget this project, any project. Don't you think that's appropriate for decision making? That's all I'm asking. And I'm thinking he's standing there. Maybe he could give us some insight on that.
Without going into any details on the particular project, is this something you feel like you can answer?
What I will say is, in my old speak to other projects that we've done.
Well, hang on one second, just before I even go down that road.
Okay.
Just it's not necessarily zoning it residential. It's a high density residential district. So it could be a school that doesn't pay any taxes, or a church that doesn't pay any taxes, or a public cemetery. So I don't know if we want to explore this topic too much. And I think it's going to lead, no matter what it does, it's going to lead us down a road of specifics we don't want to be down.
Mm-hmm. So there are many uses for a residential rezone district, both approved and conditional.
I think that question would be more appropriate for a site plan review hearing if the time should come.
Okay, thank you. Gwen. Is council completed with, okay, Robin.
Yeah, honestly, Melissa brought up something which is interesting, because I quite frankly hadn't heard about the targeting of EPA implications that that might have for every community. But I was wondering and kind of directing that at Bridget as to if in fact we decided to go forward with the change in the zoning for high density from where it is. Is there an ability to establish a contract which we could hold, create an option to be able to hold the company to ensure.
Well, did we set you up for that? Because that's a segue.
That's exactly what. Right?
Up till now, it's been very much a mutually exclusive. It's either I or R, and so we at least internally have met to try to say, okay, we understand that there are people that are interested in protecting these aspects and having these sort of contingencies built in, but still allowing a project, a safe project, to move forward. So how do we balance the two? And We talked this week and we thought we would at least give you the third option, as Roger likes to say. What's the third option? We think there, you kind of done this with your adult recreational marijuana where you had, we created, remember we didn't just grant the zoning allowances, you granted them with conditions. And in that case, it was like an operating agreement. I think in the planning world, there's a distinct way to do that that you've done before too. Maybe not you personally, but you as council has done in other projects like the province, where we, well, I'll let Bridget's the expert in it, but we've been brainstorming this to at least give you a third option. We're not here to recommend the third option. If you want to keep it I, keep it I. If you want to change it to R, we want you to know though that we think you may have a third option. That's all.
Yeah, and I want to clarify a few things before I present on the overlay option, that the projects there, the Cleveland and the Cincinnati, I was not actually given a copy of the communication to council, but it was forwarded to me. Those were asbestos remediation, as well as the Brook Park project that was referenced. Asbestos remediation is a completely different program under the Ohio EPA. They are under the same OAC, Ohio Administrative Code chapter, but the voluntary action plan is under the 300s. The asbestos is under the 20s. For example, we did asbestos remediation at 266 Northwater, the property that was just demolished. That is something that can be done through an administrative process with the Ohio EPA. The cleanup that is needed, the chemicals of concern that are on this site need to go through a voluntary action plan with a certified professional that does it. So I just wanted to clarify that they are, brownfield is a umbrella term, but within it there are parameters and limits. So to Dave's point, Chapter 1104 allows for overlay districts. Now everybody thinks the overlay district is just the overlay district that's downtown, and that is in existence. However, it allows for the creation of an overlay district, which means the zoning beneath stays the same and contingencies are put into the overlay. So the province was done in an R3 actually for a higher density. It was the first overlay that was done other than the downtown for a development. If you remember, that was the Edwards Group. It was, I believe, 2010, 2011. So the overlay allowed for that higher density that you see right now on Summit Street. So Chapter 1104 allows for the creation of an overlay. So there could be, and again, you're not advocating for this, but I want to make sure you understand all your options. The Planning Commission recommended unanimously not to rezone this property. So you can, you know, align with the Planning Commission or choose to not. But the other option would be to create an overlay district that would allow industrial zoning to exist, the overlay being R3, but add those contingencies that they meet those criteria for the environmental cleanup to residential standards. So the overlay would be approved at an R3, but with those criteria in it. And just for just a sense of the scope and scale of getting it to residential, if you looked at figure 10 and 11 in the packet from Brownfield Restoration Group, if you're to get it to the industrial commercial, the IC standard, you have to remove basically 2 feet of soil in various spots. There's other remediation that's needed, but those speak to those areas where soil remediation, 81,385 square feet of soil would need to be removed to get it to the IC, to the industrial commercial. To get it to the residential will be six times that, 506,593 square feet. So there's no way to estimate what the assessment to look to residential standards would be, but it is a significant lift. So putting those criteria in an overlay district that said, we'll give you the overlay at R3 as long as these standards are met is an option. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
Gwen?
Yeah, Bridget. Are we done with our speaker? Should we allow him to sit down? Or is this a co-presentation situation? Did you want to grab a laptop?
Are you done?
You can speak once Bridget's done, perhaps, if we have a question.
Yeah. Which one is me? Yes. You can speak.
I'll just quickly say we're open to talking about an overlay district. You know, that is an option. Absolutely. I will say, you know, from my standpoint, the Ohio EPA
you know, we've looked at this, we've looked at the requirements, what their options are. There is several different options that the Ohio EPA allows for, or a couple different options for this type of cleanup and how we can do it. So I'd like to be able to utilize the Ohio EPA set standards and have them kind of identify. I would just say, you know, if we have the ability to, you know, since Ohio EPA is the determining factor really on what is clean and how is it, how it's clean, to let them to decide. And if they are, they give the thumbs up, then we would, you know, proceed. If not, we can't proceed. And so, I would love to have an overlay district if that helps some concerns, but I would prefer to stick to those standards that they provided.
Bridget, do you have something to say?
I agree with you, Ohio EPA, because they set the regulations. The phase one assessment to get it to determine what is needed to get to residential is needed. The SME study was a review of brownfield restoration group. Anything can be remediated at a certain cost with certain time. So some more specificity would be needed to ensure that those residential standards are being met. And that would have to be done through a phase one assessment to determine exactly what those criteria would be to ensure that the chemicals of concern that are on the site, which include quite a few, if you've looked at the study, are remediated to appropriate safe residential standards.
Mm-hmm. But the council is, if I may ask a question, would that be something the staff could present to
the
us?
Phase ones are expensive. So with, we would, that would
I mean
be,
the details.
Oh, the details of what criteria could include in that?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I would like to do it in consultation with the certified professional that we have worked with who is in the VAP program. You have to actually be licensed as a certified professional, a CP, to understand that. So I will tell you, though, the assessment cannot be done. Just it could be benchmarks, but until they actually do the assessment and the assessment to get it to this the first assessment that was done for what we have doing now, that was accelerated at 6 months. So it's not a quick process.
Jack?
Yeah. Bridget, if the overlay district, we went with the overlay district and the EPA were disbanded, we would still stick with what we had put in that overlay.
Correct. If those criteria were not met, then the underlying zoning of industrial always stays. The overlay only is applicable once the criteria for the overlay to get it to the R3 residential are met, which would require basically complete remediation to residential standards of all the chemicals of concern on the site.
So can I just jump in on that? So good partnerships have good definitions, right? Like, so you're raising a great question. Like, what happens if the EPA, that scenario? And I think we just have to be thoughtful and put as much of that in the document. I mean, Bridget gave you a good answer right there, but I actually would like time to think about how we can structure that language more specifically than just sort of, she gave you a good quick answer, so don't get me wrong. And we also agreed that, presuming the EPA exists, that the VAP has traditionally been the best program to make this a part of, which is what he put on the board too. So, I mean, the developer was thinking about the voluntary program as well. You know, there's an approval process by experts at the state and experts that they hire, and we can hire our own experts to weigh in too. The beauty of, I think, what this allows is you're the author, we and you are the authors of the contingencies. And I'm not saying we need to get into site plan contingencies because that is a separate process.
That is.
But I do think there is questions beyond just the remediation. There are questions, there are going to be questions of timelines. How long are you going to give the developer? And we talked about, I would probably ask him to start with that question, you know, like, how long do you think you're going to need? And then we hold them to that. And what happened, we're going to have scenario B, where if the EPA goes away, does everything disappear? Or do we have some modified version of that the original plan, they have to hire external, or I don't know. You know, I don't know what it is. I'm just off the cuffing it right now, too. But I think this at least gives you more control, just like you had with the adult use recreational marijuana. Remember, there was like 10 items, safe property, video surveillance of it, you know, all those kind of things, which is specific to that property. I'm not necessarily getting to that level, but I think that's worthy of those thoughts and conversations to what else you might think needs to be in there. And I'd rather not do that tonight. But tonight, no, I think it would be give us a sense of thumbs up, thumbs down, get out of town, whatever that is. And then we can go back and, you know, candidly sit with the developer and kind of hash this stuff out.
Okay, okay. I saw Melissa, then I saw Roger, then I saw Robin.
So this is for you, Bridget. Does this, I appreciate our staff so much looking for ways to meet the needs of our hometown bank, potential developer, potentially bring more housing into Kent, remediating property that's not being touched right now. And for all the community members that live adjacent to it, I also, my first 4 years, I spent living at Dodge and Pine. So whatever the issues are with the, you know, the pollution there or the CACs, you know, I have concern about that. But I love the creativity of it. It sounds very complicated. And it sounds like there might be, it might open us up to more legal issues. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so the voluntary action plan or the VAP is basically the goal, the reason properties go through that, the reason the city has done that now on two properties and partnering with the owners of 800 Mogador on their process to do that is because at the end, if it is remediated to the standards that you meet, whether it's residential or commercial industrial, you get from the Ohio EPA a no further action letter and a covenant not to sue. It's an NFA CNS. And that is basically the golden ticket. That is what you want. It took us 8 years, 8.5 to get the NFA and the CNS on the site on Lake Street. We are 3.5 years in right now on the Triangle Cleaners. The EPA just sent back comments on the NFA submitted by our certified professional. So it is a long, complex process. If they do not get, there'll be a lot of criteria in there, but if there is not a no further action, covenant not to sue, issued by the Ohio EPA that affirms it is to residential standards, the overlay district doesn't come to fruition would be one of the criteria I would require. You are putting people on a site to live. So you want to make sure that it is meeting those standards and criteria. As I mentioned, we had one on Amatech that we had a section that we could not remediate to even commercial industrial standards. So you don't know with a brownfield what you're getting into, but that NFA CNS would mean we've met those criteria. It's R3. Thank you.
Okay.
So there's the, can I add in, there's the environmental sort of liability legal question, but the process of using an overlay district is legal.
Yes.
It's been used here. It's part of the, what the Ohio State of Ohio allows. So that the process itself is fine. So
it's been in our zoning code for quite some time. We've not used the overlay other than for the province and for the downtown, but it is a mechanism that's used to basically not lose the underlying zoning. So that way, if something doesn't, if the project that is associated with the overlay doesn't go forward, the map, you know, you don't want to rezone a map just at a whim. It really is something that our zoning map was established based on a community that was already in existence in 1971. The industrials were put where we had industrial and they are still operating in those realms. So this allows for the zoning, underlying zoning to not change and only applies the overlay once it's brought up to the appropriate standards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Roger.
Yeah, Bridget, let's talk about the overlay for a minute. As council, we extended the downtown overlay already, correct? A part of this property?
Actually, no.
No? Okay.
So we rezoned the parcel that is to the north of the property that is on, like they're asking to rezone the two parcels to the south of the one that was rezoned. It was rezoned to commercial downtown. However, the overlay, which is in a separate chapter of the zoning code, was not extended to include the overlay. And for those of you that may remember, I know Jeff will, that the hotel, when it was presented,
correct,
the style and design was not liked by the Architectural Review Board at that time. And when they realized the overlay district had not been amended to include that parcel that was in the CD, there was some correspondence sent to the Planning Commission, of which Jeff was a member. So you got to remember the overlay district is an overlay of design guidelines and now in our case design regulations in many instances that apply. And that overlay downtown actually covers CD, NC, R3, it covers other areas. It's not just single. So that parcel actually is not in an overlay.
But we did rezone it.
Yes, to commercial downtown.
Commercial downtown.
Yeah, CD.
Okay, Robin?
Yeah, then my question boils down to this. I'm going to trust the judgment of the staff. Should we create more time to discuss this issue, evaluate whether or not it would be appropriate?
Well, I think the decision before council is basically affirm the recommendation of council, vote against that recommendation or the overlay, but that vote tonight does not mean that we are going to have it all fleshed out. It is going to be a complicated requirement to get the criteria in there to ensure that the R3 that is the overlay can be brought to the standards that would even allow for residential use on that site.
My question, I want to trust the judgment of the staff to get us to where we need to be. I don't want a situation, as Melissa brought up, of a Flint, Michigan, where you had the issue of the water, the contaminated.
Depending on what council votes tonight, they vote to support an overlay, staff will go through it with professionals to ensure. But can I guarantee you that, Robin? Absolutely, I cannot. The only way I can guarantee you that residential won't be affected as if the site doesn't become residential. I cannot give you that guarantee. No one could.
Yeah, I'm not looking for
that. No one could. All I can tell you is we can ensure that the overlay, if approved by council for the R3, will meet all the criteria under the VAPS to get to a no further action covenant not to sue for the safety of any residents that might potentially live there.
And my question still is, giving us the guidance to where we need to get to, a little direction on what to do tonight would be very helpful.
But we haven't gotten to the point of a motion yet.
Right.
We haven't gone to the audience and council may not be done asking questions. So let's just put that to the side for now and make sure that everyone that wants to speak can be heard. Jeff?
Yeah, well.
Are you done?
I can wait till I don't have a comment.
So you have a comment, not a question.
It'll be a question for staff after public comment.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to ask for some help with, you guys have a list.
Yeah.
Could you call names and see if they still are interested in speaking? And, you know, we'd like to hear from people. And again, well, even though the mayor said we don't have a time limit, we should have a time limit just to respect everyone in the room. So if we can have a time limit of, say, 2 to 3 minutes, if you have a lot to say, otherwise, say your piece and we can move on. And questions are certainly permissible. It doesn't have to be just comments. Okay, so first name.
Ann Courtney Davis.
And you'll want to state your name and your address for the record.
My name's Ann Courtney Davis and my address is 555 Franklin Avenue. Regardless of how, whatever direction this takes, how it impacts me as an individual and the people in my neighborhood, the homeowners in my neighborhood, ultimately the bottom line about this is what direction should we go with that property that's in the best interest of the city as a whole? When I first heard about it being zoned residential, I was really excited in a positive way because I would just love to see more, the opportunity for more people to own their own home, because that's what creates a stable city and a stable environment. And that's what makes people want to stay here. I mean, and not another Silver Meadows, okay? I hate to say it, but.
Okay, so you're speaking to the kind of residential that you don't want to see, which could come later.
But I think that's being addressed. It was addressed by the entire council, that whole issue. So I'm not even going to that. So, but I want to tell everybody here how grateful I am for the thoughtfulness that you're all giving this. So I'm really deeply grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up will be Doria Daniels. I'm just going to bring the microphone back here.
Ecstatic at the conversation that we just heard, because what you have just said is the very I'm not brilliant when it comes to, I said a conditional R2, but what you've just talked about is something even more so than what I had originally thought about, because what you don't realize is that I have been talking with the bank and I have been talking with the developer and the capital venture capitalist. The Historic South End has been very much engaged with this entire, I don't want to say project, but this entire concept, because we want to bring investments into a community that has been overlooked for at least 50 years for the last development. So I'm happy to hear that you're looking in terms of this overlay concept that's not going to hurt our industrial folks. You know, if Coppin wants to do something, we have an opportunity for him. But in the same thing, we have an opportunity for our residential area. And what you don't realize is that, because a lot of people have been complaining, that we're concerned about the preserving the history. We've talked with these gentlemen. They're willing to do some of the things that the very community has been asking about, looking at potentially repurposing some of the building if it passes the EPA requirements. We've got the farmer's market down there. Some of the land there might, some of the section there could probably still be used for parking. So there's things that we can work with this developer. Don't dismiss them. They're willing to work with us. The bank is willing to work with us. So I'm happy to know that you're thinking in terms of, because I was going to say, if you didn't, Kent City Council, what you going to do for the South End? Because we came to, most of you were on council at the time, Roger DiPaolo and I came to you to have that area declared a historic community. And it's a codified, and then now the next step is, how are we going to develop it and make it a good, strong investment? Because we've been doing things in there to try to encourage folks to come down and invest into the community. So I'm happy, Kent City Council, you're looking in the right direction, and we got potentials to make this thing happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you give your address for the record? Thank you. And who's next, please?
Next up is Sally Burnell.
Address, please.
My name is Sally Burnell, 235 Lake Street, Kent, Ohio, 44240. I'm a lifelong resident of Kent. I'm a historic preservationist. I'm also, when Roger DiPaolo died, people wanted me to be sort of step into his shoes and like, not a chance. But anyway, this gentleman was talking about, well, is he, that site's either going to be industrial or residential, and how, you know, there's going to be, if it's industrial, it's going to be all these heavy duty trucks and pollution and all that. That's kind of a lot of bunk. I'm going to debunk that right now. That old railroad shop building has a lot of potential for reuse. There could be, I have a lot of people right now, I've been gathering a lot of interested parties, rail fans, preservationists, railroad historians, all kinds of, I've been driving all over the place until my car died this weekend, trying to gather a whole bunch of people together to get on our side to preserve that railroad shop building. It's got a lot of interesting places, things that we could do to repurpose it. A lot of people are interested in seeing maybe a rail museum. Rail fans are legion. You can't believe how many of them are out there. They're everywhere. They are just completely, you know, really nuts about anything railroad. They would come to Kent if we had a railroad museum, maybe a railroad themed diner. We could have the farmers market. Kent's the only community I know of its size that does not have a community center. We should be ashamed of ourselves. That building could be a community center. It could be a heck of a lot of different uses that are not, by the way, industrial. So we're not going to have, by the way, heavy trucks rumbling down side streets, which is you know, the way this gentleman portrayed it. So there's a lot of really good uses. And besides which, that building was built by Marvin Kent. It put, as was mentioned, it put Kent on the map. Before that, we were a sleepy little Franklin Mills, a little canal town. Marvin Kent came in here, built the railroads. That railroad building, if we demolish it, which sounds like y'all are really in favor of just getting rid of it and putting a bunch of housing up, you're going to lose something that will never be replaceable. And furthermore, I'm a low-income senior. My retirement pension equals $13.50 an hour. I make less than a kid slinging burgers at Burger King. Between my rent and my Medicare next year, I'm going to be paying $2,000 a month out of $2,700 a month I get. How the heck am I supposed to live on that? I don't know. And all the new housing that goes up, all it succeeds in doing is driving up property values, driving up rents, and driving people like me out of the city. Y'all seem to want to get rid of people like me. It sure seems that way from where I'm sitting. It seems like you only want to turn this town over to the university and get rid of older seniors and residents like me who've been here. And we built this town. And we resent the fact that y'all are trying to raise our rents and property values and everything to the point we can't live here anymore. You know why people live in Stowe? It's because they can't afford Kent. Roger DiPaolo lived in Stowe. And I asked him once, I said, "My God, you're Mr. Kent. Why do you live in Stowe?" He said, "I can't afford it. It's too expensive." So Kent has got to do something about people like me who want to live here and want to preserve our history. I was part of the whole Kent Wells Sherman House project. I helped to save the Singletary House up in Streetsboro. I'm knee deep into this project. I want to see this building saved. I don't want to see more overpriced housing that's going to drive up property values, which is going to drive up rents, which is going to drive people like me out of town. I don't want to see that. I know we need housing. But you know what? I'd rather see what you need to do. I'd rather see some rent-controlled housing set aside for people like me who want to stay.
We're talking about specific kind of housing. So let's not talk about that at this point.
But please, back. please do what you can to preserve that railroad shop building. It's got potential out the wazoo.
Okay.
That's so, not industrial.
I'm just going to speak to that real quick, Sally. The city doesn't own that building. It's privately owned by a bank.
I know.
That's trying to sell it to another private owner. So we don't have control over what they do with their property as long as it fits within
the zoning. But you can vote to not let these developers in that are going to drive our property values up.
Okay. Thank you.
Mary Jo Stewart Minor.
Kent. Third generation in the house, been in the family for 110 years. It's right across the street from the post office. And my main concern about the development, which I think is nice, but the traffic. I hear, you know, the post office trucks during the night. Hall Street was redone for the post office. They don't come down that way. They come down William Street. You would notice when they leave how much they jump over the curb to go up William Street. There's a lot of traffic on Franklin Avenue. And I think this would just be worse. You know, you're not going to put anything on Summit Street. The light down there, there are a lot of accidents. There are accidents at the post office. And it's just a mess. And
spicy. Thank you.
Jeffrey Tharp.
Thank you for letting me ask a couple questions. It's 646 Franklin Avenue in Kent. My one question is, there's two parcels of property. One doesn't have an address that is adjacent to our home between the post office. Why are two parcels being rezoned to high density residential? It doesn't look like it's on the footprint to build anything on. It looks like it's a small piece of property on that. The question then I would ask out of that is that the reason it was being asked for is ingress and egress. So what my concern would be is, what does that affect people that live on that street and getting in and out and next to my home? So I don't know if that's something when you're starting to decide what you think. I know you're saying it's not projects down the line, but but they're asking for two different pieces of property to get rezoned. So I think that could be separate decisions.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Brian Gray.
Brian, did you want to speak again, Brian?
No, I'm sorry.
Brian Gray, 3969 Ranfield. May I ask the council why the city has not designated the historic buildings as officially historic buildings? Because I understand the city laws protect historic buildings.
The way the city handles that is when a property owner requests to have their property designated, the city is a certified local government, happy to do it. We've done it with half a dozen properties. So as soon as the property owner wishes to have that designation, we're happy to help them.
So there's really no protection on anything unless the owner wants it protected. Well, I think it's a great property. I think it has a lot of potential for a lot of different uses. Just today I saw in the news, the city of Ravenna bought Sunbow Valley. They're going to turn it into a park. I think it has two large barns on the property there. The city of Ravenna might end up making those into event centers or something like that. I think the city of Kent could make a wonderful event center out of these historic railroad buildings. How often do you ever get the chance to expand downtown? It's always landlocked in every other case I could ever think of. You can't ever make downtown bigger. This is a little bit of a chance to make downtown bigger, make something for the community to want to go to instead of just making the community more people, make it have an attraction.
Thank you.
Donna Gray. She said pass.
She said pass. Yes. Okay.
Carol Tharp.
Property 646 Franklin. I'm concerned too, also regarding the parcel with the last digits 002, because it sits exactly next to our property. And I guess any proposed project will be ingress and egress on Franklin. And actually I'm concerned because that'll be right on the side of the home we own. So if there was a project.
Thank you.
Ben Garmier.
Hello, Ben Garmier, 341 Oak Street. My family owns the industrial rail site, the end of Oak. Our property butts up to the proposed property side. We'd like to keep it industrial. Main reason is the property's been industrial for about 150 years. I do believe that it is a historical site. If you haven't been in the building, it's a timber frame building. It's beautiful on the inside. So, I recommend looking in it if you have a chance. It's a beautiful building. I think the property is really close to the tracks. I think the Wheeling ABC is going to be growing in the next few years. And that track there is going to see a lot more traffic. So I think that's going to be some issues that you'll see. I don't agree that the site is difficult to access highways. I think Mogador Road doesn't have any housing on it. It's right there. Goes directly to 76. All through industrial the entire way there. So, I mean, it's not like a truck would have to leave that site and cut right through the neighborhood. It can cut right down through Mogador Road, head right out to 76 down there where Menards and Myers is in Talmadge. So, I think that the environmental cleanup is really optimistic at best. And I think that past we've seen some issues with environmental cleanup in Kent, especially the property across from Mogador Road that's directly across from us. So that's the only thing I'd say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Todd Packer, did you want to speak again? Okay. Thank you. Jeff St. Clair.
Jeff St. Clair, 130 West Williams. I've lived right there for 30 years, and I've seen that neighborhood today as single family homes, and it's a great place to live. When the proposal for the hotel was put in, I spoke before the Planning Commission, and was my point then as the same as it is now, that property is uniquely unsuited for residential. And it was in it, and that hotel project didn't go because for many reasons, I suppose. But one of my objections at the time was that West William Street was going to be the main entrance for that. And there was a preliminary traffic study that showed 100 cars per hour will be coming and going on our street, which is already a cut through street. West Williams is known for people zipping down between Franklin and the post office and, you know, from 43. This project similarly will degrade and perhaps destroy the quality of our neighborhood. So my point is that you're looking to approve this. You're really warming up to the residential overlay, it seems like, without considering some of those details. Another point is that the environmental problems are just one of many problems with this site. The fact that there are no roads in and out of it now, I mean, as people had said, there's no real access to it. It has listed the address as Franklin. The article that we saw before listed it as West William Street, which should not be the entrance for a residential neighborhood in that property. When the hotel was proposed, I went to the engineering department. We looked at the plans. And the engineering department scratched out the West Williams entrance and drew the entrance onto Summit Street. And if this goes through, if you guys are, you know, playing with the idea of the residential overlay, well, then that should be part of it, that the entrance will not destroy the neighborhoods. We heard from people on Franklin Street who are worried about this, a business in this property who is doing well, who, you know, wants to keep it industrial. So the access is a problem. The environmental pollution on the brownfield is a problem. Also, the train tracks are a problem. People, once if they buy these high-cost apartments, they're going to find there's a train going by every couple hours all day and all night. That is going to be a huge impact on the quality of life for this neighborhood. It's industrial for a reason. That's the reason it hasn't been turned to houses before now, because it's very unsuited for residential. You know, we live, I don't know, a block or so away from the train tracks, and I've gotten used to hearing the trains. It's one of the great things about living in Kent. But it's a different story if they're right next to you every night. The same with that hotel proposal. Imagine spending a night in a hotel there, you know, with those trains blaring in the middle of the night. And these people who buy these apartments, I'm sorry to say, that rent these apartments are going to have the same quality of life issues. So you have, you know, you're buying, renting an apartment on a former brownfield.
I'm going to cut you off real quick that we're not going to talk about the apartments because they're really aren't any apartments yet. We're just talking about the potential land uses. I understand your concern. I remember when you spoke before Planning Commission, and
yeah,
and if that property does get rezoned and then redeveloped, there are issues that will be addressed through site plan review again at Planning Commission. But we don't want to talk too much about a project that isn't really proposed yet, just about the specific overall zoning for the property. I understand your concerns. Yeah, well, I just want to make sure that we're being clear about that.
I do want you to be aware of the viability of residential units on this property, that they could end up being a blighted neighborhood. And you're not only, well, the proposal could not only create one neighborhood that with substandard living, you're going to create blight on the surrounding neighborhood by increasing the traffic. Without proper traffic study as a requirement for the residential zoning, I don't see how you can make a decision. I mean, I guess I'm talking about the idea that, you know, the specifics of this housing development, but our guests spent an hour with beautiful pictures of these houses and, you know, selling you that idea. And I think the idea also of the historic, the property has value with the building that's there right now. A lot of people have talked about that. You know, there are other uses for this property. I'm sorry about the bank. They want to move it. My mortgage is with Hometown Savings, you know, or it, you know, I'd like to see and thrive, but this is not the way to do it. This property is unsuited for residential.
Thank you.
Travis Coben.
Could you state your name, please? I missed that.
Travis Coben, 7001 Red Brush Road. Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you for your service and for hearing from all of us tonight. It's been a long night. I own and operate Coben Machine. We are located on the four industrial zone parcels directly south to the parcels in discussion. We share a property line at Oak Street. We also own the easement that provides access to the ABC Railway, as well as our neighbors, the Garmiers, which recently purchased and invested in their business. Coben Machine operates out of the Oak Street parcel, which doesn't have a formal address, 431 West Elm Street, 501 Dodge Street, and 440 Harris Street. Three of those lots are all interconnected, essentially making me the owner from Dodge Street to Oak. I've been a taxpayer in Kent for 37 years and a property owner and employer in the South End for 27 of those years. My wife and I relocated to Kent 20 years ago, work and raise our family. Our three sons attended Kent schools and now work in manufacturing, proudly here in the melting pot of the historic South End. We strongly oppose the proposed rezoning of the parcels in discussion from industrial to highest density residential. Our manufacturing operations support a growing annual payroll exceeding $3 million, all subject to the city's income tax needs. Proposed change poses a threat to our business, as well as the integrity of the city's industrial corridor. Particularly given the significant recent investments that we have made, all based on the historic industrial zoning status of our parcels and the parcels in discussion. This change will result in an operational conflict and financial risk. Rezoning the high density residential is incompatible, as you've heard, with the area's industrial nature. We have made significant recent investments. My business, Coben Machine, has invested over $15 million in manufacturing expansion over the past 5 years, all in the South End. This was a strategic decision informed by clear communication with the Kent Department of Community Development. Every time we invested, every time we bought a lot, we made a phone call. I talked to Bridget. This included acquiring the industrial properties on Elm and Oak Streets, as well as purchasing a flag lot from the land bank on Elm to ensure a little bit more setback, because we do respect the neighborhood greatly. These investments, which created a 150% increase in jobs from our business, were made with the explicit intent of growing our operations in the South End. The proposed rezoning contradicts that understanding of the established, that we established with Kent City staff and undermines our long-term investments. There is fundamental operational incompatibility as we look at this. Some of you are business owners yourselves, and currently our operations work in harmony with the neighboring community. We go to great lengths to be a good member of the community and consider ourselves non-resident members of the community, with the exception of our retired neighbors and those of that are young enough not to attend school. I spend more time in the South End than anybody. Ask my wife. So that being said, the risk of future restrictions is of concern. The reasoning creates a risk. The rezoning creates a risk of the city imposing new regulations on the business to satisfy residential neighbors. This could include limiting our operating hours, restricting access, which is already a problem, not only for the residences, but for the businesses, to the point where we actually made inner drives between our businesses to alleviate pressure on the through traffic in the neighborhood, all on our dime. So this rezoning is inconsistent with the historical city planning information that we use to make long-term business decisions. Proposed change contradicts and undermines the city's commitment to protecting the industrial corridor, which has been designed for its current use to ensure a stable space for industrial and economic activity for many, many years. It contradicts a sensible expansion plan. We support the land bank's efforts to restore the parcels. We have in fact invested thousands of our own private dollars in restoring the parcels that we own, none with taxpayers' dollars, all out of pocket, all paid for upfront, no debt. The land bank's proposal aligned with the long-term safe and planned use of the space for industrial purposes, providing much needed room for expansion within the corridor. Rezoning contradicts this plan. It also sets a precedent for encroachment. Approving this change would set a negative precedent for future land use decisions, signaling that industrial land is available for residential encroachment and threatening the corridor's industrial viability. Public safety and economic impact. There's been a lot of speak about the impact to the community. I'm as concerned as anyone. There's not been a lot of discussion about the rail yard as its current use. There also hasn't been much discussion about the railroad that is active and the recent increases in activity planned. Are you guys aware that the railway just sold within 2 weeks ago for nearly $1 billion?
Yes,
actually. Sold. Are you aware that there is a Menards distribution center north of the town that has planned railway access and will stimulate additional activity on that rail line? Are you aware that Kelly Sands runs limestone cars in and out of there pretty much on a daily basis? I'm aware. I spit on those railroad tracks from my driveway. Those trains are loud. They are heavy. High density residential on top of that presents a risk, an unknown risk to future residents. So increased safety risks, high density residential housing next to industrial operations and an increasingly active railroad increases public safety risks. Evaluation of the land, including high density residential housing,
directly next to existing industrial property is very unfair to those who have made recent industrial and commercial investments. It will negatively impact the value of industrial land by creating less desirable environments for industrial use, of which I am a member. This threatens local jobs and economic stability for the industrial sector. Our business, as well as the neighboring industrial businesses, provide local jobs and contribute significantly to the city's tax base. Jeopardizing operations through this rezoning threatens the workforce and the local economy. My request. The City Council has respectfully requested to follow the Planning Commission's recommendation and deny this rezoning request. The Council is asked to reaffirm its commitment to protecting the industrial corridor and the high density residential development move to more appropriate locations within the city. I agree we need more housing, just not here. Thank you for your time. Anyone have any questions for me?
Chris has a question. I have a question.
Wait, we got a question.
Tell Dave.
Kidding.
Can you say more about how you've said very persuasively how you feel like the rezoning would upset not just your business, but the industrial corridor? Can you say more about how, for example, it threatens local jobs, how it threatens your business in the industrial corridor? Well, just sure. More specifically, if you can.
Sure. So I'm a manufacturer. Right. I've been in business my whole life. I'm a product of vocational education. My business was built from scratch, like a lot of good machine shops. It started with my dad in a one-car garage when I was 8. So I'm a lifer, right? I love manufacturing. I love creating jobs. I work hand in hand with the public-private partnership that exists within the city, which has historically been a good one. The industrial corridor, as it was explained to me many years ago, was not to be touched. And many business people like myself have made huge decisions based on that data. Decisions to spend millions of dollars to reinvest, to clean up industrial sites rather than screw up the next cornfield like we hear people talking about here tonight. I'm a Boy Scout at heart. I'm all about cleaning up, and we didn't make the messes that exist on those properties, but I still advocate for cleaning them. Anytime we chip away at the industrial corridor, we chip away at the economic footprint that the city has to raise taxes. So you can raise taxes through property taxes, you can raise taxes through other things of that nature, but nothing raises better taxes than good paying jobs. And there aren't better paying jobs that exist within the city of Kent than the high dollar manufacturing jobs that are sweeping the country now. The average age of a machinist in the United States is 57 years old. I'm 55. There's a whole generation of kids that are going to take these jobs, and the state is a big proponent of developing these jobs. In fact, Roosevelt High School just received a $2 million grant all within the 6th District Compact to expand the cadet program. We hire those kids. I have 3 of them working for me now. One of them just graduated high school. I sent him to a technical training at 17. He's the youngest candidate to ever go to the specific industrial training school that I sent him to. He had to take his mom to get a hotel. So, right. So we feel it's good, but we also know that we need this space. There is definitely constrained housing within the city. Industrial space is more constrained. The industrial corridor was engineered to defend that.
we're competing against that. And I have a lot of respect for these guys. This guy's worked his butt off with this plan, and I give him kudos for doing it. However, we have to fight for the industrial corridor, because in fighting for the industrial corridor, we're fighting for the tax base of the city. They do not have unlimited funds, right, Dave? We have to fight for it. Therefore, this zoning is a bad idea.
Ask a follow-up. I'm still interested in specifics, right? So I'm hearing that we have to fight for the industrial corridor. We have to fight for good paying jobs. I think these gentlemen made a persuasive case, which is no one's knocking at the door of Hometown Bank trying to buy this property for industrial use. Do you know of specific folks in the industry who are interested in this property? And if not, what is the...
Well, you guys have deterred speculation the whole night, right? So I'm going to respect that fact. However, that being said, I do know that there is interest for industrial use. I can guarantee you, if the remediation takes place, and we sure hope that the EPA is around to do it because we need them, that the value of the property will increase, and it will eliminate this restriction that the bank is constantly up against with trying to get the site back to a usable state. So the fact that it's zone industrial doesn't mean that it's not polluted, right? It's polluted beyond an industrial standard. What Bridget has worked hard to put together is a huge opportunity to bring that property back to a safe state, right? Safe not only for the residences, but safe for future potential industrial occupants, people like myself and people that have jobs that work in industry that go there and spend all day. Those are the people that are at real risk, right? Much like you mentioned the risk, you know, the cleaners was at the top of your street, right? And it was a big problem. It's up to us to solve these problems. As a business owner, I feel we have a responsibility to do it. By changing that zoning, it does compete against my business, against many, many years of investment, hard work, hard effort, and millions of dollars spent in good faith that the industrial corridor would be there to insulate us. If I got high density residential right next to me, you think I'm building that? What happened at Land O'Lakes? They've been up there on the hill churning butter for 30 years, right? We move high density residential in behind them, they get complaints, they have to spend millions of dollars. Now they did the right thing and stepped up. However, there was conflict, right? Small businesses like mine don't want to afford that conflict and can't afford that conflict. Additionally, the city can't afford that conflict. The city has finite resources. If we create potential conflict, all we're doing is setting up potential future residents for trouble, existing stakeholders who have spent millions of dollars, and the city who is already at their limit for spending. So I think that it's imperative we understand that that property is best suited for industrial use. It needs to stay that. And I love the historical, you know, nature of that building. I probably put more thought into what that thing could become than anybody in the room. But nevertheless, changing it now is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have any questions, Ms. General? Oh, Melissa? Robin? Thank you. I can't see Robin.
Trevor, I want to first off thank you for what you've done for the area and working hard and really being a benefit to the South End community. The factors that we work from as a council are those that are in front of us. The property since 1973 has become a brownfield, underutilized. Somebody steps up, decides that they want to do something with it, they bring forward a project. Concern is that while people are thinking about it, and you're a businessman, while you're thinking about it, other people are acting. This is not our property. We've had how many years where that property has just sat there. Now, I have a lot of other issues I'm going to have to deal with. I have residents that I represent and everything who are going to be directly impacted. I'm worried about traffic, worried about all these other things that we're going to have to sit down and find ways to address. And not everybody's going to be happy because nobody ever is.
You have a question, Robin?
Yeah. Ultimately, it's what can we do? I mean, we're worried about diminishing the corridor down there. But it never came to us. I mean, we saw that, but nobody then approached us as a business to say, this is what I plan to do. Because I believe if that had happened, a lot of us are going to triage this thing. We probably prefer, I know I personally do, prefer industrial. But that's not what's in front of us. And we didn't know about any other prospects. So we act on what is there. And I'm just trying to say that to figure out how you feel ultimately. We should be doing these things. How should we know better? What could we do better?
Well, I think we could all do better, honestly, when it comes to attracting business to the town. I love the city of Kent, just like all of you love it. I moved here. I could have moved anywhere, right? And that's a common theme that you find within the town. And like I said in the beginning, I am really a proud member of the melting pot of the South End. I own businesses on both sides of Doria. I can withstand anything. We watch out for each other, right? My whole team, and I have 47 people, 47 souls on my ship, walk between the buildings rather than drive. We put a private drive between our buildings because, as you know, where Cedar turns into Elm, it's horrible, right? We got a business that's constrained there. One of my neighbors who's, you know, unloading trucks in the street and doing their best to survive as well. And we skirted that by spending thousands of dollars putting in a drive. We replaced the fencing around the entire northern parts of our property because we did land government contracts that require us to have a secured site. We have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars just cleaning up the exterior of the buildings. We built a new warehouse. So I, like you, agree. I feel like we've been gypped for the past 30 years with the industrial feed.
Pardon me?
Did you say we've been gypped?
Yes.
I think we should just maybe cut that one out. Because
so we have been shorted on access to opportunity. Now, that being said, I do believe for the first time that this is changing. Right now, the state of Ohio within the Ohio Jobs Program is putting together the single largest rebirth of manufacturing space in the state's history with the Anduril Defense site that's taking place just outside of Columbus. This site alone is expected to create between 3,000 and 4,000 high-paying manufacturing jobs, not to mention the Intel site, which is going on 2 hours south of here. There have been some huge recent developments within the defense manufacturing space that we're recently learning about and we think will come to fruition. We do expect huge opportunity. Many of the opportunities that we've currently not had to be able to pull work into this area. We have, like I said, we went from 30 people to nearly 50 in just 5 years. Mm-hmm. Given a little more opportunity and a little more time, I expect the size of our business to double. But again, that's not why we're here. But I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay. So do we have any other speakers?
No, that's it.
That's it? Is there anyone that hasn't signed up that would like to speak? Okay, that's okay. That's okay. You can come to the microphone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get back to our 2 to 3 minutes.
I'll look at it. Okay, my name is John Spindler. I live at 501 Franklin Avenue. One thing I'd like to start off with, I can actually give a better opinion with my one neighbor who said lives on William, how the trains do shake the building. I am only about 600 feet from the tracks. So these houses are going to be even closer. This is going to be a piece
of point of order. There are no houses. Just point of order. There are no houses. We're only talking about potential use.
We'll say whatever tents they live in on that property, they will shake. So anyway, I'd like to say is that if the EPA disappears, that will be bad to a certain degree, but they are not godlike. And I will say is that we should look at this property that with the waste and all that, that is there truly nowhere else to build? We can really not have any other residents anywhere else that we can really see that this is maybe just a mistake, try to build residences there of any kind. That this is an industrial area. And for one thing about traffic, we do have to remember there is the train tracks there that you can also haul stuff out through the tracks. That's why this was the industrial corridor of the town, is because they used the tracks to get stuff in and out of town. So we don't have to worry about only trucks and stuff coming on the roads. There is the, you can load stuff up right next to them and put it on a flat car. Now, the trick is here too, we do need to have some, money is a good thing to generate, but here we're getting to not understand here that just residence is a bad thing. We all can't cut each other's hair and feed each other at the restaurants and make a living. We have to actually build stuff. And the country is starting to turn around with industry. It is starting to, with how we're starting to run the country from where we used to be farming it out overseas. This is things are starting to come back, as we're seeing with some of these, I'm sorry to say, those ones who had the three that have a factory or industry on this line are growing. And so I would assume they might grow more. And if they could work at it, they might find people to actually want to be there. Another thing too, I got to say is it's kind of like, if you will, what we're seeing going on in Washington, D.C. with Trump is that sometimes that, put it bluntly, you guys in city council maybe should be putting some effort to trying to get some industry into town and not let it just become a bedroom community for the college. We need to have more. We have to be a more well-rounded community. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we need most. But I will end at this. The one very important thing is that I understand why they want it, you guys, why they want to change to the R1 and jump over the CD, because that's going to be about $500,000, give or take, to clean it up that way. And it's going to cost about a little shy of $2 million to make it for the R1. And I understand that, heck, I can imagine, but you really want to go over there and dig up 2 feet of dirt, haul it away, put something new past the inspection and say, okay, now can I get my R1 classification? Are you kidding me? You only did two feet of dirt. Take that dirt out too and go down another 8 feet. I can understand that they do not want to jump into cleaning up to the smaller standard that is presented there to want to jump to the bigger one. I understand that, but I'll tell you something. I don't know how many people would really want to live in a place that used to be a cornfield or live where something was industrial and has toxic waste, even if it's 10 feet down. I'm really kind of questioning that anybody would really feel I want to do that. Mm-hmm. If they really know what they're going, what's going on.
Okay. Thank you. For
that's what comment. I would say is that you need to consider that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Have we heard everybody? Oh, okay. Please come to the microphone. Name and address, please.
William Garmeyer from Renewable Workers. We own the rail there and at the 341 West Oak Street. And I spoke the last time about the industrial site there. Purchased an industrial site for many years, probably 50 to 100 years before we bought it. We knew we were buying an industrial site. We bought it for an industrial site. We know the railroad is going to be valuable there. You asked how, you know, that hurting the industrial corridor, what's that do to the industrial area? Well, again, if you guys can set that and make it a commercial site or a residential site instead of industrial, you know, any of that area in there, who's going to want to buy that when they found out that the city's already turned it over to a commercial site or a residential site? My interest in there is, of course, a rail. We did it for Land O'Lakes. Land O'Lakes was interested in a rail siding there. Could deliver tankers in to help them to supply their margins up there where they have their Land O'Lakes facility. And we purchased that rail with the intention to help them. We also own 200 acres in Portage County, the farmland, but our main facility down there is our manufacturing for bio-based lubricants. We're the largest manufacturer of bio-based lubricants in North America. We bring in anywhere from 60 to 80 semi-tankers a year, supply our needs down there. Work close to 20 employees down there. Some of those employees will be coming up to Kent to work because we have to have employees there to pump oils off and on tankers. Bringing in jumbo tankers, and we can pump them off and bring truck tankers down to Southfield, Ohio, where our farm facility is. So the interest was is an investment in an industrial site there so we can supply that need. We also have a large German company interested in us supplying a private label for them. Mm-hmm. With that interest, well, that's going to up our volumes. We're going to have rail tankers come in and out there. Mm-hmm. The advantage of the rail also cuts down, you know, the traffic, because we're not bringing semi-tankers out and in. We're actually just, the rail comes in, we can actually then load rail site there and then we ship it out there.
Mm-hmm. So, are there any questions for this gentleman?
All right. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. The property owners interested in speaking? Okay. All right, well, it's back to council. Public comment, I guess, is closed. So it's back to council. So do we have questions that we want to ask still? Is there a motion to be made? Yes, Gwen.
I'd like to make a motion requesting the city administration to look into the details of an overlay district and give us some feedback on whether that's feasible or not.
And comments?
That if we approve this motion, that will either confirm the planning commission's decision or overturn it, correct? So just go to like an exploratory phase?
It's a moot point, but yeah.
Okay.
Exploratory.
Right. So what happens with the decision of the planning commission? It just hangs out.
And
okay.
Asshole.
What period of time does council have?
I have to look in the zoning code. I know with planning commission, it's a 60-day period. I don't know if there's a time limit on council decision. I will look in the zoning code and I can let you know.
Perhaps we might be able to, if the developers or the applicant is open to it, we can see if they would be willing to extend some time for your final decision. And if they are, that won't be a problem. If they don't want to do that, then we can come back to you and say, you know, we need to make a decision in a certain period of time.
So is there an amendment?
I don't think that we need an amendment. Nope. The way that I stated the motion was that we explore it and city staff come back and let us know whether it's feasible or not. I think that would, I'm satisfied with it. Are you satisfied?
I'm satisfied with that.
Do we have to get a confirmation from anyone for this, the timeline right now, or?
Well, there's a motion.
There's a motion on the floor. Sorry. Can I waive it?
Yes.
Okay. I'll waive it for this particular comment and come to the microphone, please.
Thank you. Just very quickly, and Bridget, I would actually ask you this. How long do we have until the decision needs to be made for the bank to put the $436,000 into the grant?
Can't answer that. It's basically the grant agreement is between the land bank and the Ohio Department of Development. I know that there's quarterly progress reports due. There's going to be one due at the end of September. The grant period actually began a year ago, but the grant agreements weren't signed till June. So they're running behind. However, the last one said that the bank was going to be signing for the match. So the next one due at the end of September, I would think that ODOD at some point is going to ask why the match agreement, the escrow agreement to confirm the $438,000 in match has not been executed. So
from what I was told from planning commission, during planning commission, my understanding is that we are at there is a time frame that they are waiting for us to start cleaning the site. So the bank is at a point to either put the money up or there is potential, I guess, to lose that grant?
There isn't a set timeline, but remediation has not started because the escrow agreement to commit the match in order for the grant agreement to go forward has not been signed. So at some point, there is a risk because the remediation, in theory, should be underway, but the match agreement hasn't been executed.
Can we bring this back in another month?
We can, yeah.
I mean, is there time for that to bring it into committee?
There will not be time to get a phase one assessment done to determine exactly what requirements are going to be needed to get it to residential. So I don't want to set up a false narrative. We can look at what we can bring back what we can in a month for sure. After discussions, for sure.
I just wanted to throw this out there as a comment. Is there a potential possibility to vote on the overlay district, which we are supportive of, the idea of getting to a covenant or not to sue, as Bridget mentioned, if that's the language, then we are willing to do that with the Ohio EPA. If that can be a vote tonight to allow the bank assurance so that they're willing to, and I can't speak for the bank, obviously, but that give them the assurance to move forward.
Let me ask those who made the motion. Run that by me again, what you're asking for. He's asking for a vote, down vote.
On an overlay district to be, you know, determined by, through staff, and approved by council at a later date, but to approve a essentially an overlay district to allow R3 zoning as an overlay to this set to the current, you know, to future decided conditions.
So in previous discussion, we were told that this was a very complicated topic that would require quite a bit of discussion. So I wouldn't want to change my motion to commit the city to something that was sure. We hadn't fully vetted out yet. I don't think that's totally reasonable to make that motion.
I would.
At least I'm not comfortable making that motion. I don't know if Dave, you'd like to, or Hope would, or Bridget would like to weigh in on the feasibility of something like that, but I'm not in a position to make that motion right now.
I have the second, so I can go real quick. I think this is presumptive on an affirmative vote on either an overlay district or an affirmative vote on overturning the planning commission's decision, which we haven't discussed or decided on. So I think that we should vote on the item we have at hand to explore a overlay district. You know, I understand the situation you're in, but I think that that's doing the best by the people of the city is to explore all options, and we need to take our time and do that properly. So I'd like to move the vote.
So are there any other comments from council? Yes, Melissa.
As long as this is just an informational request that we're making, we're not actually voting on an overlay district, just to clarify for you and to make sure I know how I'm going to vote on this. Okay.
All right. So, anybody else? Okay.
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Wait.
There's a motion on the floor.
But the chairman overruled that to let this gentleman, and you got two hands in the back. Am I correct?
I'm sorry, where?
What?
In the back, you had two hands.
Well, the public comment is closed.
Yeah.
But she also made the comments that she would let this gentleman speak. So you opened the door.
Let anybody else speak.
Am I right? Does anybody have an objection?
Point of order, just for legal, there was a motion, it was seconded. I understood that we have reopened public comment, but now there's been a move to call the vote on it. So I don't know where we're at in the like paradigm of rules. I called the vote on the exploration. I called the vote on Gwen's motion. So we need to vote on it.
Yes, you do. Bridget, about the time limit. We've got two things going on here. Let's see you call on this overlay district, and it passes, and the staff go along our way, and we do what you want us to do. There's a way for a vote. I'm not sure that I don't know how this. I mean, I suppose you guys could vote yes or do the vote. You could uphold the planning commission with the understanding that we are going to go back and explore that overlay. I just think it's unfair to keep the developers, like, what do we do now? Do we appeal?
So my initial question that was going to happen after public comment was going to be, if there is a motion made that dies for lack of a second, where does that leave us? If I were to make a motion that died for lack of a second, like this is before Gwen made her motion, and then we were given a chance to explore the overlay district, that resolves, then that just defaults to the planning commission's decision, correct?
You need an affirmative.
Well, if the overlay, that's just new tonight, if the overlay does not pass, I would then ask you to, okay, now vote R3 or.
But just to be clear, there isn't a vote out there to make an overlay district. There's a vote out there to explore ins and outs.
Correct. And that's what I mean, the exploring.
I don't mean to, I'm not the expert, but it was my sense, what I was hearing was there's interest in exploring the overlay, but there's also a clock ticking on your vote on the recommendation from the planning commission. You can take a vote tonight on the planning commission agreeing with them. And because the overlay still keeps the base zoning the same. So that doesn't really affect anything moving forward with the overlay by voting in favor of
the current recommendation of the planning commission. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes, so we move this vote, and then somebody else can make a motion regarding the planning commission's decision.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm gonna call this question. All those in favor of exploring the overlay district?
Aye.
Aye. All those against? Passes.
I'd like to make a motion to uphold the decision of the planning commission.
Is there a second? Any comments? Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? All right, passes. Are we done with that issue? Okay, very good. Moving on to the next. All right, we have a public art appeal variance request.
I don't agree with. Wait.
Do we want to give a couple minutes to let the room get cleared if they?
You have something to bitch about now.
Any?
I guess I'm glad it's over with.
I have, yeah.
I'm gonna leave a while. What are we waiting for? Yeah, we don't want to make it too far. Man, she's wheels really came off of them, dude.
If I was on the plane, please, I'd walk right out the door.
I told Claudia to register tonight. I said, how do you open them? That's what they're telling it to be. And if we do it, we can get the police. She says, that's the way. That's why.
And we said, it doesn't have to be. I heard that loud.
I'm sorry.
Step for industry. Or even school industry.
Yeah, it's just actually.
Does it need to be mediated to just? In order for there to be.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna suggest a 5-minute break.
Okay.
5-minute break, okay.
Well, I mean, we only got 20 minutes to go.
Let's make it quick.
I'm working in 6 hours.
You should let those two talk because of that guy. You both. Howard and they had their hands up.
Did you guys want to?
That's right. And you're making cheese. Cheese, right? That's right.
Yeah.
Can we get back to what we're here for tonight? Because we have a 10 o'clock deadline.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff.
Will the council members take your seat so we can convene? Go out and hurt a man. Go out and hurt a man. Mike, who's missing? Robin, well, Robin, come on.
All right, we're back in session.
Where's Jeff Clapper?
How long does it take?
Melissa's coming.
We're back in session. Okay.
Who won Jeff Clapper yet?
Yeah, we can go ahead and start, please.
Thank you. As you may remember, with the update to the zoning code back in 2021, we added a section that allowed for public art. We assigned the review of public art to the Main Street Public Art Advisory Committee. And the process has worked well. They vet the proposed public art, submit the recommendation to staff. We review it for compliance with section 1106.20, and then we issue a fine arts permit. This is the first instance where we've actually had one that has come in where it is being proposed on what the Main Street Kent Advisory Public Art Advisory Committee would have deemed to be the side of a building. But in our zoning code, it is a front. Every corner parcel in the city that abuts right of way has two front yards. And there's a reason for that, a front yard, front property line, frontage, because front, as you know, means different things in different places. So we need to make sure we're consistent with it. Front is used, for example, for the height of fences, for the location of signs. So when this public art recommendation came in from the board, the advisory board, it is basically the facade that faces South DePeyster. This also, because of the 195 is addressed in East Erie, it technically still has two fronts. We are not we are prohibited from approving public art on a front facade. So there is language in the public art section that allows for the it to be appealed to council. So that is what is before you tonight. I do believe we have the artist, if she stayed, she did, who can speak to this. And then I can take questions about the request.
Hi, my name is Grace Nestor Louie. I'm at 556 Silver Meadows Boulevard, Kent, Ohio. I just want to say thank you guys so much for having me today. So I have spent the summer working with the Kent Public Art Board, and we think we've really created a design that embodies Kent. We wanted a nature-inspired mural. So this mural has a native Ohio pollinators and wildflowers, and these wildflowers you can find right by the river in Kent that is just a couple minutes away from us. We wanted it nature inspired that also had an educational aspect to it with the pollinators in it. And Lazizas Restaurant had reached out to me because they wanted this mural on the side of their building. They had expressed to me that since Dora was implemented on the opposite side of Kent, Acorn Alley has received less foot traffic and thus receiving less sales on that side. And a lot of the Acorn Alley members are really feeling it. And so this mural is a strategic initiative to bring more economic development to that side of the Kent. So it's not just decoration, it is strategy. And so this mural is designed to be an Instagrammable mural. People go here, take pictures in front of it. It gets shared online. So that way people can go take a picture and then go out to eat at the restaurant and then maybe go buy something at the Tiger Ray Boutique. It's to bring people here. In addition, the mural has Hello Kent on the front of it. It's a very Kent-esque mural. We want to make it a landmark. And it's right across from the bus station. So that way when people come in and out of Kent, they get greeted by the mural. You can also see it from the hotel. So those residents staying there, the guests will be greeted as well. This mural has been approved by the Kent Public Art Board, by Main Street Kent. The Business Chamber of Commerce is on board. The building owner of the Lazizas Restaurant is on board. The business manager of Acorn Alley is on board. So is Lazizas and the other residents of Acorn Alley. So what's left is for you guys to approve to help bring this area downtown. And this side of the wall, there's no public entrance into it. It is on a side. It's not going to affect anything with the front. It is just going to increase the value of the building. And I think this is something that Kent really needs and could be a monument and landmark for Kent. Thank you.
Any questions from council? Yes, Melissa.
So actually, can I ask Bridget a question? Thank you so much. Yes. And I really appreciate it. I saw the design. I love it. I love murals. I'm super happy. What is your concern?
We have no concerns.
But so I just need a variation in order to make this happen.
Yeah, I basically am requesting, you know, the request for the variance is being put forward. Staff does not want to waver from how we use the definition of frontage that could create issues throughout the zoning code and have ramifications in other cases. And since I've got 7 active cases in court, I'd rather not add another.
So anybody else from council questions? Anyone from the audience have any questions or comments? Okay, back to council.
Move to approve.
Second.
Do you need emergency?
Please.
With emergency.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against?
Thank you.
It passes. Woo!
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for waiting all night.
Okay, let's see. We have Stream and Wetlands Foundation land donation.
There she is.
With Angela.
I didn't see her. Like, she's gone now. She's here.
Good evening. So we have a very exciting opportunity to bring in front of you. This is Greg Snowden. He's here from the Stream and Wetlands Foundation. They are currently the owners of 3 parcels, which are located south of Fairchild, west of Majors Lane. They are in contact with Kent Parks and Recreation because they're interested in donating those 3 parcels to us, which just so happen to be adjacent to our Jesse Smith Nature Preserve. Also across from Fairchild is where our park maintenance building is, where we have ball fields over there. That's where part of the future Lake Rockwell Trail is planned as well. So there's a lot of potential there, not necessarily for development, but for connections and trail connections. So the park board is unanimously in favor of accepting this donation, and I'm here tonight to see if you have any questions, because I would like your blessing as well.
Questions? Yes, Melissa.
Hi, first of all, I'm super excited. I hike that all the time. And thank you so much for offering this to us and Kent. Is there any concerns that you have around maintenance, cost of maintenance? I know we can't develop on it because it's a wetland, but is there any concern that you have that there's going to be extra cost or any kind of liability that we would incur by taking this on?
The only additional maintenance at this point, other than unforeseen, maybe a fallen tree that falls onto an adjacent property owner, because there are some homes along Major's Lane, would be the sidewalk on Fairchild, and we're prepared to clear that in the winter.
Thank you.
Anything else from council? Is there anybody else from the audience that would like to speak to this? Okay, back to council.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the generous donation with emergency.
Any comments? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? It passes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. All righty. We've got the Franklin Kent Jed Income Tax Agreement Renewal and Amendment. Bridget, go, go, go.
This is a housekeeping issue. We need to renew the income tax agreement that's entered into between the JED board and the city for the administration and collection of income taxes. The only thing I want to highlight is that this renewal includes language for the JED board to consider and vote on potentially using RITA for the collection of those. Other than that, it's just the same language as before. I will be back with Brimfields on the same next month. They just didn't get theirs back to us in time.
All right. Sounds good. Anyone from council have a question? No? Anybody from the audience have a question? Back to council.
Move to authorize with the emergency.
Thank you.
All right. All those. Any comments?
No.
Nope. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, up next, we have the proposed DORA boundary expansion.
Bridget just told me to keep it to an hour. I'm going to try. She said, hurry up, Eric. Blind Squirrel Pub has submitted a request for Kent City Council to consider authorizing the expansion of the city's DORA boundary to include its location at 802 North Mandela Street. We've also heard the same from River Merchant at 911 North Mandela. And Bottles 101 at 115 North Willow Street. As valid liquor permit holders that want to take advantage of the DORA and all it has to offer, we think this is a reasonable request. After consulting with Chief Shear about the proposed expansion, a safe route was established to include all three businesses, and it is in that application.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions from council?
Yes.
Yes, Jeff.
So just the map here, it is just that direct route. It's not an encompassing.
Yes. What it's doing is just including the sidewalk. I think that just the software they use to make the map can't make a finite line around the sidewalk.
Right. So that being said, and this will be something for down the road, I know I brought this up before, connecting Franklin to basically from the corner of Franklin by the farmer's market to Port Bevy.
Yes.
And then what about the line from, we'll call it Blind Squirrel, over to Bell Tower? Like, do we want to?
I think a lot of that went through residential, and this was just the most direct path that included a route to the River Merchant and Blind Squirrel.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Anyone from the audience have questions? No. Back to council.
I'll second.
All right. Any comments? Discussion. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, is this next one just informational?
It is just information. We can wait if you want.
Yeah.
It's totally, we know that a couple of you had questions on housing after the last meeting. We want to circle back, but we can push
that. We can do it very quick.
and we're waiting.
No, let's wait. Let's wait.
Wait on.
Thank you very much.
Let's do it thoroughly.
Yeah, I'd like to hear a thorough discussion.
It's, and Rhonda promised me she'd be less than 2 minutes. But the clock's running. The clock is running.
Not a thumbs up.
Yes. Certified taxes, right? Okay.
The first item is to accept the amounts and rates for the 2026 budget for the taxes, tax levies. Based on what the information we received from Portage County Budget Commission.
Questions?
This is basically housekeeping.
Questions? Anybody in the audience?
So moved with the emergency.
Second.
Thank you.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Second one, budget amendment request. That was on, you gave us that piece.
Yeah, the budget amendment is also housekeeping. There is a revised amendment. The middle two funds, 138 and 203 or 202. It's a correction from last month. What I did is I reduced the appropriations when I in fact shouldn't have done that because it's a 2024 PO. All we had to do is reduce the amount on the PO and the money would have gone back and we should have just increased the 2025 budget for that amount. So we kind of negated, we had an increase, but we had a negative, so it negated. So I need to add back that amount. So that's what that's.
Questions? Ready from the audience? Back to council?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
That was pretty close.
Yes, we have. Oh, how close are we?
You have 4 minutes.
You got 4 minutes?
Yeah, mine will be quick. I'm asking you to correct an ordinance that was passed back in 2024 when you allowed Petros Development Group to get a tap in from the city out in Brimfield. The ordinance did not include, it specifically said they would not have a 50% surcharge. The developer understands they will. The ordinance is just going to correct that and say it will have the surcharge on it.
Okay. Any questions from council? Anyone in the audience? Back to council.
Move to approve with
second.
Second. Further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Next, we got Mr. Bowling up with ODOT and State Route 261.
He can be quick.
We're requesting council's consent for ODOT to resurface State Route 261 in Kent at no cost to the city.
Any questions from council?
Or the speedway.
Any questions from the community? Back to council.
Move to approve with emergency.
Second.
No further comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right.
So the last one here. We're requesting a council resolution of intent to submit for reimbursements to OPWC for the Sunrise Boulevard rehabilitation, which you already approved us going for a grant and a loan, which we got, and this is a formality that's required.
Questions from council? I don't see anyone in the audience. Back to council.
Move to approve with emergency.
Second.
No further comments, then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
We can learn.
Thank you, Jim.
Wow.
Yeah, I was getting ready.
2 minutes to spare. complicated issues, boy. When you get something out. Yeah.